Versatile actor Jeff Daniels, the star of Dumb and Dumber, The Squid and the Whale, and countless Woody Allen flicks, is my guest today. He started making records at the behest of the board of his Purple Rose Theater Company in his hometown of Chelsea, Michigan, who thought it would be a great fundraising opportunity. And yes, he is well aware of the public perception of actors turning singers. Jeff, first of all, good to see you. And second of all, you know you're entering an arena that is fraught with, mischaracterization. And
hacks. There have been many actors, singers, songwriters who have blazed the trail before me. You're absolutely right. And not necessarily often and not such a great way.
Yes. Have you ever had conversations with your fellow actor, singer, songwriters?
A few times. I've talked with, traded emails with Ronnie Cox, who was in Deliverance, among many other things. And Ronnie just absolutely loves this whole kind of getting out storytelling thing and with a guitar. And Robert Downey Jr. talked to Robert a little bit. And I'm aware of it, but it's just something I've done. I've played on my back porch for 30 years with no intention of bringing it out.
And what are the songs you write, those original songs, what were they diaries or what were they like?
It was basically a musical diary. I mean, as I look back now, I mean, I moved to New York in 1976 to be an actor, and I bought a guitar and took it with me. And I didn't know it then, but I was very, very interested in the writing side of these things I do. And whether it's on a film set or a stage or songwriting, I was just interested in the writing process. And over the years, I've started a theater company, the Purple Rose Theater Company in Michigan, and have become a playwright. I was interested in Lanford Wilson. Lanford was one of the great American playwrights and a Pulitzer Prize winner, whom I worked with several times in New York at the Circle Rep off Broadway. And I was just fascinated by why he rewrote that scene. Later on the set of Purple Rose of Cairo with Woody Allen, Woody would rewrite on the set. Jim Brooks on Terms of Endearment, on and on and on. And so it just, when I turned myself into a playwright and as I kept working on songs, I really was really fascinated by the guys who really treated the song as something, really cared about the words and cared about the lyrics and versus just see if I can write a hit. And so that's just what I've done. And if the fact that people are remotely interested in listening to it, you know, is stunning to me.
Now, doing this live, I would think, would not so much come to bear on your film work, but on your stage work. Was there a lot about that? Are you playing a character when you do this live?
Maybe. If it is, I'll get some therapy to determine how bipolar I am. Because the biggest thing I realized that when I started doing this, which again 7 years ago for my theater company in Michigan, we had to raise money, and so in yet another attempt to raise money, we pushed me on stage with a guitar. Sold tickets and hoped to God someone would come. And they did, mainly to see a train wreck, which is pretty much what it was. In film, on stage, you're playing a character. They're someone else's words. You walk out on stage with a guitar and you plug in and you're singing your songs. People want to see you open up your chest and show them your heart. And that was, I wasn't prepared for that. I didn't know the nakedness that the singer-songwriter feels and then is supposed to feel. That is supposed to embrace in order for it to translate, took some doing.
Stand-up comedian, singer-songwriter, two of the toughest gigs I can think of. You're out there all alone.
Yeah, yeah. And there's an art to hanging on to that crowd, you know. When you don't have a band, there is an art. And everyone I've seen, Arlo Guthrie, Kelly Jo Phelps, Keb Moe, all the guys who've played with bands or played solo, there is an art to keeping the audience engaged and you know, how you build your set list, how you bring them. And in my case, I love comedy, so I'll make them laugh to set up the serious stuff. And I've really loved the creative challenge of just how to hang on to an audience over an evening.
Now, this the latest release, all of which, as you mentioned, benefit the Purple Rose Theater Company, is the one that you did with your friend Jonathan Hogan called Together Again. And there's humorous songs throughout all of what you've done, but there's a bunch more serious ones on this one.
Yeah, John and I, he's an actor in New York, and we've been playing off and on together for 30 years, as many songwriters or guitar players do. You get a buddy and you just trade your songs, and that's what we've done. So as someone who has his own little independent up on the internet label, I can do anything I want. So I put Hogan in a room and we recorded these songs, and some of them are a little more serious than others, and than other the other two CDs. And it was just a great chance to kind of capture what Hogan and I have been doing for 30 years.
Well, one of the songs on here I thought might be appropriate for you to do, because we have an affiliate in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I believe this story happened after a gig in Harrisburg.
I was playing Harrisburg, Pennsylvania about a year and a half ago, and and we went out to a hotel bar afterwards, you know, on our way to the next show, and there was a guy trying to pick up a girl down at the other end of the bar. And as a playwright, songwriter, you are constantly, your radar is out. And I overheard many phrases, and certainly this was the theme of what he was doing. And it's called Start at the End. The best damn pickup line I ever heard was by some guy in a bar south of Harrisburg. Seen himself a woman, she was drinking all alone. I watched him blaze a trail into her great unknown. He sidled up smooth like a man on the make. That empty seat beside her was his to take. He said, darling, I know just what you think you're thinking. Bartender, I'll have what she thinks she's drinking. And before she knew it, he was in control. She was the rhythm to his blues, she was the rock to his roll. And all he had to say was, where do we begin? How about we start it? Start at the end. Bet you've lived a life best forgotten. You're up for grabs, you're downtrodden. Your past is on your back and your future's too far. And now you're where you don't know why you're where you are. He said, if somehow or other you made me king of this world, I'd turn your oyster into a great big pearl. Snap of my fingers and a wave of my wand, I'd brighten your darkness with a brand new dawn. And before she knew it, she was in control. She was the rhythm to his blues, she was the rock to his roll. All he had to say was, where do we begin? How about we cut to the chase? We'll start at the end. Before she could say a word, he's staring off in the distance like he's broken down, needed some roadside assistance. He finally turned, looked her right straight in the eyes, said, darling, at the risk of seeing a grown man cry. Well, I don't know about you, but I'd love to live in a place where I'm surrounded by love, compassion, and grace. There ain't no castles and there ain't no thrones. Everyone's got everyone and no one's alone. There ain't no hatred, there ain't no greed. The only thing you want is the only thing you need. Where miracles happen and dreams come true. Where a man like me is a man like me. Can love a woman like you. Best damn pickup line I ever heard was by some guy in a bar south of Harrisburg.
That's our guest today on the Cafe, Jeff Daniels. Yes, that Jeff Daniels, and that is a song called Start at the End, which took place in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And of course, if it is the best damn pickup line, there's only one thing that defines a great pickup line. Did it work?
They were very happy when I left. Yeah, they were. He was definitely. There was some forward progress that had been made.
Excellent, excellent. But you didn't stick around to the.
No, I thought that the song was over at this point. I'd gotten what I needed. Yeah.
Let's sort of go to the beginning of where this comes from and talk a little bit about the Purple Rose Theater. When did you start? And what were you? It's in your hometown, Chelsea?
Chelsea, Michigan, which is near Ann Arbor. And Kathleen and I moved back there in 1986. We had both grown up there, literally in that town. And after 10 years in New York and the movies were kind of happening, we had one kid, we were going to have some more, and we wanted to raise the family there and willing to put the career second and family first. So career-wise or not, good move or not, that's what we did. So we were, while I was there, for about 3 years creatively, I was kind of going to sleep in between movies. And so I bought a building and tried to make a theater company, a professional theater company out of it that did new American plays, particularly those that are aimed at the Midwest, you know, hold a mirror up to that particular audience, and hired Michigan professional actors, writers, designers, directors, and that was 16 years ago. And so it's really been a wonderful, wonderful experience, and in a country that, you know, isn't necessarily as supportive of the arts as other countries are. And certainly Michigan is going through a real tough economic time. The Purple Rose needs all the help it can get, and the sale of the CDs helps.
And these tours help somewhat too, the same deal?
No, the tours, I keep that money.
Okay.
I got to buy guitar strings. But no, the CDs, I don't make a dime off the CDs. And we've been able to write checks to the theater for, we just wrote another one, $35,000 so far.
Wow, that's
so
fabulous.
That's 35 more than the theater had before.
And people know anything about funding something like that. It takes a lot more than ticket prices, of course, to keep. And being near Ann Arbor must help you get audiences from there as well, or is it?
Yeah, the Ann Arbor crowd comes over, but we really draw on like a 90-mile radius. We have become a destination, and it the Purple Rose is a real good example of what the arts can do, you know, for a community. Certainly in Philadelphia or something like World Cafe. I mean, it's there are wonderful places like the World Cafe around, but in a little town in Michigan, not so many. And we drag about 40,000 people a year through our theater, 44 weeks a year, 6 shows a week.
Wow.
4 different main stage productions. And that's 40,000 people that have wallets and purses. And all the businesses in that community are the beneficiaries of that kind of, you know, traffic.
Jeff Daniels is our guest today, and he's in here in his singer-songwriter mode. And what's next?
Well, this is a fun one. This is off the first CD. I made a movie with Clint Eastwood, which is part of what I do with my show. I really kind of enjoy dragging out some of the Hollywood stories. And made a movie with Clint called Blood Work. And long story short, I'm the bad guy, and I get shot and killed by Clint. And so to be shot and killed by Clint Eastwood for an actor is a great honor. And he even stood over me and gave me my final death line, which was, "I never liked you, buddy." So I went back to my trailer and after I was dead and wrote this song. Share brushes with greatness, but with all humility I would have to rate this as the biggest of the big, the best of them all. My dream came true, a little telephone call at the end of my line. No joking, as the good, the bad, the ugly, the king of the unspoken, make my day, blow me away, goddamn dirty hairy blues. This little part about a serial killer with a cold heart. I said, "Mr. Eastwood, I'd be so honored to play a
bad guy. The only thing that'd make it better be if I, you know, got to die. He said, well, if I had to guess off the top of my head, when all said and done, one of us is gonna be dead. Make my day blow away, goddamn, that dirty hairy blues. 30-30, 44, pull that trigger, Clint, give me what for. I'm a wanted man, dead or alive. I don't give a damn if it was six shots or five. Well, he's been around forever, but he's still number one. Hell, there ain't nobody better at holding a gun. I thought about his movies, how you always learn your lesson. Staring down the barrel, Clint's Smith and Wesson. Now that golden door of opportunity has been flung wide open for little old me. Make my day blow me away, goddamn, dirty hairy blues. Well, the closer we got to my fateful day, the more he'd stare and less he'd say. I thought this is only a movie, right? But it couldn't help but feel something about this was a little too real. When they put on my makeup for the very last time, even the makeup girl said, it's a good day to die. Make my day blow me away, goddamn, a dirty hairy blues. 30-30, 44, pull that trigger, Clint, give me what for. I'm a wanted man, dead or alive. And I don't give a damn if it was six shots or five. What is up with the no talking, man? What are you doing here, a remake of Dead Man Walking? I can see the headlines now. Actor goes out to Hollywood, makes a movie with Clint Eastwood, and then dies. Maybe I should just call my wife and kids, say my goodbyes, right? Clint? Well, the sound man said we're rolling, props game is done. Someone yelled, action, take one. He slipped off his shades and he squinted those eyes. I tried to tell the truth, but all that came out were lies. I said my final line, Clint said his. And he cocked back that hammer like he wasn't gonna miss. I wanted to cry like a baby, I wanted to squeal like a pig. I was roasting like a marshmallow at the end of his twig. I was shaking like a leaf when his upper lip curled, when he pulled that trigger, not leaving this world. I thought, wait a minute. To hell with the Oscar, the Academy, little gold statue will be wasted on me. Cause my dream came true out in Hollywood when I got killed by Clint Eastwood. Make my day blow me away, goddamn, dirty Harry. Make my day blow me away, goddamn, goddamn dirty. Make my day blow me away, goddamn, goddamn dirty Harry.
They tell you to write what you know, and you're one of the few people who could write that.
There are a handful of us who have been shot and killed by Clint. I don't think the others have written a song yet.
Now, are there ever like hootenanny scenes on movie sets where you would get a chance to like perform for other actors and stuff?
Occasionally, yeah. Somebody else will play, and you'll end up in the trailer together screwing around, but. Not too much. Not too much of the hootenanny thing. There's probably too much ego.
Yeah. And now, has Clint heard that one?
Not to my knowledge, no. But Clint would be the first one to crack up. We had such a great time making that movie. And I think inside Clint Eastwood, dying to get out as a comedian.
Now, obviously, you act, you do this. Did you always, as a kid, know that you were going to do something creative?
No. I chased what came naturally. And what came naturally for me was a high school teacher threw me on stage in a musical for South Pacific because she needed guys. And it was the most natural place for me to, I knew what to do in front of 600 people. So I just kept chasing it, to be honest, for all the way through New York, waiting to fail so miserably that I would go back to being a normal person with a normal job. And I had just enough success as I climbed and through all the rejection, just enough success to keep going. But now that I look back, you know, there's this overly creative engine that's going in me 24/7. And I think that's why, you know, film acting is absolutely wonderful between action and cut, but everything leading up to it and everything after, there's not a lot of like dead time, but it just, you know, there are other things, creative things I want to do. And that's where the guitar came in, the songwriting came in, and the playwriting came in.
What part did you play in South Pacific?
I was one of the sailors. Radio operator Bob McCafferty or McCaffrey, something. I had one or two lines, if that.
Our guest today is Jeff Daniels, who's here in the World Cafe. And these are songs from, he's got, what, three albums out now, all of which benefit the Purple Rose Theater. What would you like to finish up with?
There's a song that I played in New York. I was doing a play in New York City this past spring, and I took the subway. I was working off Broadway, so there were no town cars or limos for me. But so I'd sit on the subway, and as a writer, playwright, songwriter, you're always observing. So I looked around at all these people, and we all seemed to be going to the same place. Standing on a platform waiting on uptown train. Standing on a platform waiting on uptown train. That train comes in, gonna ride my blues away. Man with a briefcase giving me evil eye. Oh, man with a briefcase giving me evil eye. Go on, chase that dollar, mister, till the day you die. There's a strung-out junkie to die for a little taste. Ooh, look at that strung-out junkie to die for a little taste. His clock is ticking and there ain't no time to waste. The policeman, he leaning up against the wall. Policeman, he leaning up against the wall. When you look away, you don't see nothing at all. We're all standing on a platform waiting on uptown train. We're all standing on a platform waiting on uptown train. When that train comes in, gonna ride our blues away. Lady, she got both hands on her purse. Oh, that little old lady, she got both hands on her purse. Things are bad, she'll be damned, they're gonna get worse. And homeless Joe, he got a big bag of soda cans. Homeless Joe, he's got a big bag of soda cans. He cashes in, a gonna be a wealthy man. And that old man, he got a feather in his pork pie hat. Yes, he does. Ooh, that old man, he got a feather in his pork pie hat. And a smile on his face says, what do you think about that? Ha! We're all standing on a platform waiting on uptown train. We're all standing on a platform waiting on uptown train. When that train comes in, we're gonna ride our blues away. Mama whispers, baby, now don't you cry. Ooh, mama whispers, baby, now don't you cry. Well, she sings that child the subway lullaby. We're all standing on a platform waiting on uptown train. We're all standing on a platform waiting on uptown train. When that train comes in, I'm gonna ride our blues. When
that train comes in, gonna ride our blues away. When that train comes in, gonna ride our blues away.
That's Jeff Daniels. Now, I was reading that you had some impromptu guitar lessons from Kev Moe. Was it finger picking lessons or?
It was many. He's been so nice to me. It was like a 3-hour crash course on more like what not to do, because I was doing a lot of not to do things. But no, he couldn't have been more helpful. Lyle Lovett's been a guy that's been so supportive, and I was just. For those in the Pennsylvania area, it was literally yesterday at Nazareth, Pennsylvania, up at the Martin Guitar Factory, and happened to be there at the same time that Stephan Grossman was there. And I remember back in the early 80s when I'd taken the guitar to New York and was doing my three chord, you know, living down at the bottom end of the guitar, Stephan's tab books on how to play country blues and all that, finger picking were some of the first books I went to. And I'm so happy I got to thank him for all he's done for me yesterday.
Wow, that's great. Now, that song and a couple others require you to be the unobserved observer. I mean, you're not Clint Eastwood, but you are pretty darn recognizable. Is that easy for you to do?
You know, there's a way to do it. You certainly, you know, as someone who doesn't travel with an entourage, which has always seemed to me of look at me, look at me, look at me, you can sort of disappear, especially in a city like Philly or New York. You can, people tend to, you're not the first celebrity I saw today, so they kind of are over it. Right. So it's when you get out in the hinterlands that they kind of go, oh my God, it's, oh my God, you are you? You know, that thing.
And he is. Jeff, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you very much.
A real treat. Jeff Daniels, our guest, and we'll return in a moment here on the World Cafe.